Good morning. My name's John Cutler. I'm here for NAFCA. In this court's Dana decision, the court established two important principles for this case. One of them is that shippers are not to be penalized for failing to adapt their production schedules to erratic rail service. The other important principle is that shippers have to have the right to challenge demurrage charges. The STB ignored in the decision below the first of these principles and, in our judgment, paid lip service to the second, because in many instances the cause of the demurrage charges at issue is precisely the erratic rail service provided to our clients. The board's preference is to talk about a change from an era of excess rail capacity to an era of tight capacity. Capacity would be even tighter today but for the fact that shippers are supplying 60% of the national railcar fleet, a fact the board fails to acknowledge. You'd think the railroads would be grateful to shippers who shoulder these $100 million burdens, and most railroads are. BNSF, however, has adopted the most extreme and aggressive policies in the industry. The board didn't even consider why BNSF needs such punitive charges when no other major railroad does. The agency argues that railroads don't have to provide enough equipment to transport all freight. The argument in the STB's brief is that you don't build churches for the crowds on Easter Sunday. However, you do build churches for the crowds on average Sundays, and the railroads are falling far short of this standard. They provide no tank cars, and they don't even meet average demand for the covered hopper cars that our clients depend on. NAFCA members provide 60 to 70% of covered hoppers, and there are many types of grain and grain product service where 100% of covered hoppers are private. Shippers also face service variations from day to day, and railroads refuse to accept responsibility for any of these. BNSF doesn't even plan for, let alone provide, dependable service. Shippers had no choice but to acquire the cars needed to keep their facilities operating, even if more cars are in use than we would need if the railroads provided better service. Now that shippers have made these investments, BNSF is doing exactly what Dana condemned. Shippers are to be charged for storage of cars ordered in numbers necessary to take account of such variation. The board attempts to justify this decision based on alleged congestion. But let's look at the demurrage statute, 10746. That's page 9 of the addendum to petitioner's brief. Section 10746 specifies a two-prong test for demurrage charges: efficient car use and an adequate car fleet. Now, you can't promote efficient use by penalizing blameless shippers. And the principle Dana established is that shippers are not to be blamed when they don't tailor their production schedules to the erratic service of the railroad industry. So the STB's decision fails to comply with the first prong of the 10746 demurrage statute. The second prong of 10746 is the maintenance of an adequate car fleet. You can't promote an adequate car fleet by discouraging investment in private cars. At one time, railroads provided most of the rail cars the nation needs. Those days are gone. In
what you just said, go to loaded private cars as well?
Sorry?
Wouldn't what you just said go to loaded private
cars? No, Your Honor, because loaded private cars, in the case of loaded private cars, the concern is that the receivers of the cars who pay the demurrage charges are using those cars as free warehouse service. Now, they aren't the people that acquire the cars. They simply say, well, that freight can wait. Our facility is full. We'll get to it when we get to it. Our clients are the people who acquire and provide the private cars and enable the railroads to carry the freight the nation needs hauled. And their investment is in, they invest in the cars. They have every reason to run these cars through as quickly as possible. There's lengthy testimony in the record to the effect that our clients would love to have a smaller investment in private cars. However, given uncertainty about when the cars are going to leave and come back, there's testimony, for example, to the effect that outbound moves and return moves vary by 50% the time of, you know, 6 days out, 10 days back. There's evidence in the record to the effect that if you ship today, it'll take 4 days. If you ship tomorrow, it'll take 6 days. If you ship the next day, it'll take 8 days. And if you ship the ninth day, it'll take 3 days. How are you supposed to have precisely the right car fleet under those circumstances? This is a standard that the board relieved the railroads of meeting. The railroads said, we can't be perfect. And the board said, well, that's fine. You don't have to be perfect. But now, when we're not perfect,
well, when they're not perfect, can't you bring specific complaints?
We can't if erratic railroad service is the problem, Your Honor. That's exactly the issue here. We don't have the defense that rail service is forcing us to have cars pile up for more than 2 days. Now, as I said, the other railroads recognize this. CSX had a 20-day free time provision in its storage charge tariff. BNSF has as little as 24 hours in its. There's, you know, the statutory issue aside, we've also raised reasonable practice issues because the statute contains a prohibition against unreasonable railroad practices. Now, it seems that there are some fairly obvious questions you would ask when a practice like this is challenged. BNSF is one of the big four railroads in this country who control 95% of rail freight. What do the other three do? Only BNSF has this draconian policy on car storage. Doesn't that make it sound a little unreasonable?
If the other railroads had it, would it be okay?
Sorry? No, Your Honor. In fact, one of the concerns we have is that this will constitute an awful precedent that will lead the other railroads to say, well, BN is able to cash in on the vulnerability of shippers who've invested in these cars. They're stuck. They can't ship by truck. They've got a huge investment in their private fleets. Let's do the same thing. There's evidence at a reply brief at 21 to the effect that the BNSF is using the leverage that it's gained over shippers as a result of these almost frequently unmeetable requirements to build up its business. You know, the BNSF will say, well, you don't like the car storage charges. How about if you sign a contract with us for premium service and you guarantee us a certain amount of freight? We'll do something for us and we'll do something for you on these storage charges. That's one of the reasons we're here, is that we think this is unjustifiable solely as applied to BNSF. However, even if it's it becomes even worse if the rest of the railroad industry follows suit. Now, the country relies on private cars these days. As I said, 60% of the car fleet is private. The railroads have every right at any time to provide their own cars in place of private cars. But the but to say to shippers, you must acquire these cars because we don't want to, it's costly.
Well, that's for peak periods, right?
No, that's my point. The progression here, let me give you the 60-second historical overview here. And by the way, I should have said at the outset that I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal from my partner, Mr. Goldstein. In the old days, shippers have been complaining about car supply for decades. And the Easter Sunday argument prevailed. And so we said, okay, we're going to get the cars that are needed for the peaks. But it didn't stop there. The cars needed for the peaks isn't reconcilable with a 60 or 70% or 100% in tank car case supplied by private industry. But the payment for the private cars used to be prescribed. Those days are gone. The priority of private cars used to be, we argued for an equal priority. The railroad has to use private cars and its own cars equally. The STB said, no, they don't. They can prefer their own cars and use yours, make yours second-class citizens. This is not news to the STB. The LOSAC and Scott 5 decisions are asterisked in the table of cases in their brief. the allowances that used to be paid, those are going away. And now, the storage charges that formerly we didn't face when the cars were empty and moving as part of the car use cycle and awaiting loading, those have been asserted at least by BNSF and asserted in a way that we simply can't live with. And we don't even think the program is working. BNSF's standard of success. I'm sorry, let me sit down. Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Cooper?
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Anika Cooper. I'm here on behalf of respondents, the Surface Transportation Board in the United States. With me at council table is counsel for intervener BNSF Railway Company, Robert Jenkins and Sydney Strickland. Your Honors, in this case, a carrier decided that it would no longer store empty private cars on its tracks indefinitely without a charge for doing so. And there was ample justification for this decision. Overall, track capacity had declined. At the same time, traffic volumes were up, and the number of private cars on its systems were up as well. Carriers have very little discretion to move private cars throughout their system in order to reduce congestion. So a combination of those factors led to an increase in the cost of storing empty private cars. BNSF's response was to institute the same kind of storage and demurrage charges that it and all other carriers have long had for railroad cars and loaded private cars. And the process it used to institute those charges was the same as well. Charges begin to accrue after the expiration of a free period. The question for the board was whether NAFCA had met its burden to set aside, or in the alternative, to significantly overhaul the entire program. The board found that NAFCA had not met that burden, but preserved the rights of shippers in individual cases to argue that either tariff shouldn't be applied because of the facts of the circumstance. Now, I'll turn to a few of the issues raised by NAFCA in its briefing and before this court. First, this issue of fault. In the Dana case, this court cautioned the ICC that a blanket ruling that a carrier was never at fault for the delays that resulted in demurrage was inappropriate. Rather, complaining shippers or complainants in general had to be able to show that in individual cases, the railroad was in fact at fault for the delay. But in this case, NAFCA essentially asked the board to find that the carrier is always at fault for whatever delay causes the demurrage. But the board's refusal to make such a sweeping decision based on the generalized evidence of differences in transit time and other service variations is supported rather than contradicted by this court's decision in Dana. The board said that the fact that a shipper might suffer a hardship from a service failure at a particular location didn't warrant overturning the entire program because there were sufficient remedies for that problem at the board. And those remedies are the individual cases that are contemplated in Dana. BNSF recognized that in its submissions to the board, it said that if a shipper believed that either of the tariffs shouldn't be applied to a particular movement, it could try to negotiate that issue with the railroad, but it could bring a case to the STB arguing that the tariff not be applied. And in those individual kinds of cases, the board isn't constrained in terms of the relief it can provide by the relief that appears available in the four corners of the tariff. The board has the discretion to grant relief outside of the tariff. That's what all of those unreasonable application cases before the ICC was about. The tariff said one thing about the reliefs that were available. The shipper argued that the tariff shouldn't apply because of the extenuating circumstances. The problem here is that there were no specifics in this case. There was no evidence that a particular service failure led to the particular assessment of demurrage for a location or for a movement. What we had was what the board called vague claims of possible harm. I'll move to another issue, which is private car acquisition. NAFCA asserts that the board ignored its arguments that the reasons it bought private cars was because of BNSF service problems, and because of that, that the board should limit or preclude BNSF from assessing demurrage or storage. But the board didn't ignore that argument. It simply disagreed with it. The board rejected the claims that service reasons were the only were the sole reason for private car acquisitions. It cited another reason, which is to satisfy peak periods by shippers and their own fluctuations in production. But the board also said that car buying is a dynamic, company-specific, complicated issue. And the notion that it's sometimes more art than science was supported by NAPA's own member statements to the board, which reflected a number of car buying rationales, including the need to meet all levels of demand and the need to provide storage sometimes to customers. And it wasn't arbitrary for the board to reject the way NAFCA characterized this case as being all about why private cars were purchased. Why cars were purchased doesn't get at the cost those cars impose on the carrier on whose tracks they sit. And that was the primary issue that the board was examining here. Here, the board found those costs were rising and that BNSF used charges that were standard in the industry to ensure that shippers participated in sharing those costs. Next, I'll turn this to the specifics of the tariff itself.
We've set the clock at 8 minutes, and I'd like to compliment our courtroom deputy clerk who handled the situation beautifully. Go ahead.
Your Honors, before the break, I was going to discuss that the specifics of the tariff didn't constitute an unreasonable practice or otherwise violate other statutory provisions. BNSF's empty car private charges fit the mold of other standard demurrage and storage charges. The fact that they were applied to a new category of cars in this case didn't make them suspect, particularly where the costs associated with storing those cars had increased. And here the board wasn't presented with tariff terms that were outside of the mainstream.
Why weren't they imposed previously? Is there anything in the record that suggests that, or do you know?
Well, BNSF, like all carriers, has the right to assess storage and demurrage and rate charges, has that initiative. They certainly, if they felt that they were not, that those costs were rising and they weren't recovering those costs, I don't know why they didn't do that earlier. They certainly had the initiative to do so. Here, they presented evidence that they basically took a look at the costs associated with storing those cars, determined that they were rising, and instituted a program that was similar to the loaded private cars and other types of cars in order to recoup those costs.
In other words, when the board is determining, when somebody says this is an unreasonable practice and they're talking about a tariff or a charge or something like that, is the board always looking at just whether that charge is generally in line with other similar kinds of charges? Or would other considerations go into the determination of whether something is an unreasonable practice?
Well, Your Honor, other considerations can certainly go in. What the board looks at is whether the practice is reasonable and unreasonable in light of all of the facts in the case. But certainly one factor in that in this case was whether or not these types of charges were standard in the industry, whether or not shippers and carriers have long been dealing with those types of charges. And that was certainly a factor here, that for at least 100 years there have been demurrage charges of some type. Since at least the 1970s, when the first case came to the ICC, carriers have been assessing demurrage or storage charges on private cars. Those cases concern loaded private cars, but certainly the notion that demurrage or storage charges would attach to private cars wasn't new in the industry, and this program, you know, wasn't different from those in any way that it assessed those charges. And NAFCA here didn't allege that the actual daily charges were excessive or were a problem. So we're not dealing here with whether or not the $25 is an appropriate fee to reduce the congestion, nor did NAFCA establish that the free time provided was unreasonable. Here we weren't dealing with an hour of free time or 12 hours of free time. BNSF provided the same free time for empty private cars, tanker cars, as it did for loaded private tanker cars. And that charge is not challenged here. And it was similar to what other carriers also instituted as far as empty private cars around that time. Moreover, BNSF provided evidence that the vast majority of its shippers were not, in fact, incurring storage and demurrage charges after they had been instituted. So the notion that these, you know, the free time was unmeetable doesn't bear out with the record here, where most shippers were not, were avoiding these charges.
I don't know if this is a question that can be answered, but there seems to be sort of a debate between the shippers and the board. The shippers accuse BNSF of what they call erratic service, and they say that's part of the reason for the congestion, basically saying the railroads are blaming the victim. The board says, well, no, this is just service variability, and that's to be expected of railroads. That's just the way it works. So how do we sort that out?
Well, Your Honor, what the board said is that, you know, some degree of service variability is inherent in the railroad industry. You know, trains are built with cars from a number of different shippers, and, you know, some of these movements are fairly complex, and so this is not scheduled service where you expect it to arrive at 9 p.m. on Friday, and if it doesn't, then there's a problem. So what the board says is some of that is built in. The board did say that, you know, when there are cases where there's some service failure, and it could be some degree of variation that's not routine and that's the fault of the railroad, in those cases you can bring that to the board where
now,
you can
I understand the board is saying that individuals could complain about specific problems, but the question I'm really asking is, if the shippers are really saying we're just being badly served, you know, what standard does the board apply? I mean, is there some level at which the board would say, yeah, this is just really, you know, overall bad service? Or would they always just look at it, you know, as specific complaints?
Well, Your Honor, I think in the abstract, with just shippers asserting that there is bad service, it would be very difficult for the board to decide, well, then that means that carriers are never allowed to assess demurrage, even when their service is good. And what's good service and what's bad service is going to vary on the facts of the case. And so that's why I think the board's decision makes clear that when you have bad service and you can prove that it's beyond the level of this kind of routine variability that you can expect, that you can bring those kinds of cases. And there also are a number of statutes that deal more directly with service problems, where, you know, if you have a case about service, you are not without remedy at the board through other statutes. So in conclusion, because the board's decision was rational and supported by substantial evidence, I request that the petition for review be denied, unless the court has further questions.
All right.
Thank you.
Mr. Goldstein.
Please, the court, we appreciate your allowing us to split our time up this way. I'm Mr. Goldstein, handling the rebuttal for NAFCA.
Your co-counsel was saying right before he sat down that it's not working, and I thought the record showed that it was working, that this has actually improved the situation.
There is a great deal of evidence of record that shows that according to the measure that the BNSF originally set itself for this program, which was whether train velocity would improve, whether dwell time, which is how long cars sit in terminals, not doing anything, would improve. Those were the measures that BNSF said.
Some of them didn't improve, but some factors that they looked at did improve. Isn't that in the record?
BNSF, I think, argues that they were able to handle more freight with fewer cars, and we explained that there are many reasons for that that are totally unrelated to this demurrage program. And for example, there are longer trains, and there are unit grain trains now that operate more efficiently. So we are seeing reasons for improvement that aren't related to this program, even though BNSF tried to take credit through this program for all the improvements. I'd like, if I may, to comment on the STB's council's claim that the STB has left the door open for individual shippers to come back and to seek relief where the railroad has been at fault. And indeed, the decision does say that. The problem is that they have redefined fault. The problem is that they now say that because railroad service is inherently variable, that the failure to provide consistent service is not the fault of the railroad, and therefore it can't be used as a reason for contesting demurrage. Problem there, excuse me, the problem there is that the law says that it doesn't have to be the railroad's fault in order for the demurrage to be excused. If the shipper is blameless, as the shipper clearly would be, where the railroad is saying we have service we can't control. If the shipper is blameless, then there is no demurrage that should be payable. And the BN's rules, nor the board's decisions, provide for a defense to be raised in those circumstances. And that's one of the main reasons we believe that the BN's rules don't meet the statutory standard for a demurrage, because demurrage is supposed to be aimed at improving service, and if a shipper is powerless to change what its own outcomes by its behavior, as it is, where the railroad says, yeah, our adherence system isn't functioning well, then applying demurrage charges to that shipper doesn't make any sense. I'd also like to pass on to another comment, which was that things were so bad on the BNSF in terms of efficiency that they had no choice but to impose this program. And we would again ask the court why, if that's so, they acted so much more harshly than other railroads. In fact, there's testimony in the record that shows that the only railroad that assessed the demurrage charges under any program of this type against the shippers who testified in this case was BNSF. The other railroads, the shippers did not pay demurrage to any other railroads. It was also, I think, mentioned during the council's argument that NAFCA wanted to set the entire BNSF tariff aside, and that was one of the problems the STB saw with our position. That, in fact, is not true. We offered many suggestions for modifying the tariff. We took the position that there were unreasonable practices in the form of imposing penalties on shippers who had not been the real cause of the congestion, and that was an unreasonable practice, and if found to be an unreasonable practice, would justify setting the charges aside. But the same issue, which is question of fault, comes up under the demurrage statute. And there we asked the board not necessarily to set the entire demurrage program aside, but to set aside that part because of that did not permit challenges based where there is no shipper fault. And we suggested to the board that it could also modify the amount of free time that was allowed. I see my red light is on.
Would those be tracked alongside the Shippers Depot?
They are tracks, Your Honor, that are within the Shippers industrial confine.
So you'd have to do what you want to avoid, which is to bring empty cars all the way back once the goods are delivered all the way back to the shipping depot?
Well, the problem is that many of these industrial facilities, which were built years and years ago, simply don't have space within them to build the track that the BNSF says we should build to handle these empty private cars. It's a physical impossibility at many facilities. That's one of the reasons we're here. Thank you.